Good evening, everyone. wonderful to see everyone in your various environments. On Saturday, we had a day of practice where some of us were all in one place and others were in their own places. And we were all together. And since then, I've been thinking, well, it's been hard to avoid the news because the day that we were sitting all together, sharing without judgment and in silence and speaking from our hearts and listening from our hearts and welcoming all of our differences. We know that, the war has broken out in Israel again. And it was happening that day as we were all sitting, well, those of us who were sitting together. Those of you who weren't sitting with us were doing something else, which did not involve the war in Israel, I'm sure. And this is another opportunity to really look into what our practice is. I exchanged with a good friend of mine who's in Tel Aviv and who I waited. I didn't exchange with her on Tuesday, Sunday and Saturday and Sunday because I knew she would be just inundated with messages and I was quite sure that she was okay. But so I exchanged with her today and I really could feel her difficult situation and fear. She has a child and they have a safe room in their apartment that they have to isolate in. And there's helicopters overhead and explosions. And she's, talking about the murder, the Hamas murderers and everything. And I'm sure that if I had a friend in Gaza, I would have had the same kind of exchange. I'm sure of it. Because I know that from my practice, that we are all one and we all share, we all have the same desires to be happy and safe. We all want to protect our families and our loved ones. No one wants to harm others deep down. So I know this from just my everyday life and my work and my practice. I know this from having been in Israel in, it was 20 years ago, so it was a far different context, but it was the same underlying context. And being with Palestinians, being with Arab Israelis, being with Christians, being with Jews, being with Muslims, in a peacemaker forum, I know that we all had the same discourse. Those of us who weren't Israeli had nothing to do with Israel in the direct concrete sense. And those who were there, I know this. I know this from my direct experience. And that makes it really, it's almost a paradox because it makes it difficult to understand how this can be happening. And at the same time, it makes it so clear why this is happening. We look at people who have been attacked in their villages, in a music festival, and whatever. Civilians who have been attacked, and we can say, yes, this is outrageous, this is murderous. Then we can see the response of a huge military might blowing the shit out of Gaza. We can see how a people feels threatened because all of their neighbors are against them. And it's a people who have been persecuted for 2,000 years. We can see how a people who has been dislocated from their homeland and is living in a ghetto. And recently Qatar, who his help is supporting Gaza, has pulled a lot of support out. The Israeli government recently withdrew the work permits for the Gaza people in Gaza, which took away their livelihood. They already live in great poverty. We can understand. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't justify it. It doesn't, nothing can justify that violence and killing and the harm that is done. At the same time, as I said, because we know the suffering of ourselves and others, we know the suffering that everyone is enduring. And so it's a challenge to, and this is what our challenge always is in practice, is how do we use, most of the time we experience the relative without question. The differences, whether it's race, gender, sexual identity, wealth, nationality, age, all of the differences. We're very familiar with all of it. And we become very identified with those differences. And even the differences of my house and your house, my square on the screen and yours, my family as opposed to my neighbors, my cat as opposed to the neighbor's cat. I say that because my cat goes to the neighbor's house as if it's her house. She doesn't recognize, to a certain extent, she knows it's not her house, but at the same time, she's very comfortable going there. Whereas we might not have the same comfort going to our neighbor's house. Or we might ignore the differences and just go to our neighbor's house as if it was ours. So how do we function? How do we live our lives fully in this relative world, in this relative context of so many differences? You know, like Bernie Glassman used to say, the only thing we have in common is our differences. We have nothing else in common. However, how do we live in that world of differences with having experienced the absolute oneness, the unity? How do we do that? And then how do we live in this experience of oneness and unity, acknowledging also the relative? Now, an example, I heard a former Israeli Prime Minister Olmert, he was a moderate, I think he was even a Labour Party Prime Minister, and always, you know, I think he came after Yitzhak Rabin, and he really was in favor of a two-state solution. And of course, we know what happened to that. But he said, Israel absolutely has to respond to Hamas, you know, has to respond to this attack. He didn't say how. At the same time, no longer ignoring the Palestinian issue, because this is a result of, you know, the hardline Israeli government's ignoring the Palestinian issue. We can say ignoring, he was being nice, you know, but it comes down to that, really. This is kind of on a relative, in the relative sense, how to look at the absolute, you know, so see that we are one and we both all want our same interests. At the same time, see that there are things that have to be done, you know, that things that aren't acceptable. There's violence that can't be, that can't go unanswered. None of us here are politicians or involved in governing our nations. If we were, we probably wouldn't be sitting here. Like when the Dalai Lama was asked what he, if he was George Bush, what would he do? And you've heard that story, I think, after 9/11, and he just laughed because he could never be George Bush. He wouldn't be the Dalai Lama if he was George Bush. So none of us are in a position of governing or providing answers for geopolitical issues. At the same time, we are citizens of the world. And we are loving human beings and struggling human beings, hurting human beings, grieving human beings, joyous human beings. We hold all of the paradoxes that are inherent in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict within ourselves. So how do we do this? What do we do? And that's why Bernie Glassman took us to these situations. I've really thought a lot about Bernie these past 2 days. He took us into these situations, extreme situations of polarization and suffering. And how do you make peace there? We don't have to go to Israel. And we don't have to be confronted with, you know, the absolute abominable horror that is happening, because we have it here already. And our very simple day of practice, I'm just coming back to that, is a peacemaking action. Sharing food, sharing silence, sharing heart, sharing voices, sharing sitting, sharing cleaning up, sharing screen time. These are all peacemaking. We are embracing the differences and choosing to recognize our one, our unity. My friend in Tel Aviv said, because I had said to her, my daughter has a dear friend who is Israeli American, and I think also now has a Portuguese passport, because Portugal has given, is giving passports to people who can trace their Jewish heritage. I don't know how far back they have to go, but she somehow could trace her heritage, and so she has a Portuguese passport. And she's living in Tel Aviv. She's made her life there. Her parents are Israeli, but live in the US. And she has a 3-month-old baby. And she said to my daughter on Saturday night, I just don't know how, I'm not sure that I can live here. Endure this with a 3-month-old baby. Is this really the place I want to raise my child? Even though she loves Israel, her partner is Israeli and has 2 older children. And she chose to live there rather than the United States because of the quality of life and whatever. I told this to my friend in Tel Aviv, who is older and has an older, her child is, I think, 12 or 13. And who is not Israeli. She's French of Vietnamese origin and has lived in a lot of places in the world. And she said that her partner is also Israeli, the father of her child is Israeli. She said that yes, that living there required enormous desire and an enormous solidarity and a willingness to help one another, to help each other, and to open to others. And that in all the places she had lived, the Israeli people that she knows, and she said, these are not the religious extremists. These are not the Netanyahu far right people. These are not the Hamas militants. She said she has never met people with such heart and such solidarity and helping their neighbors, helping each other. And that she didn't make it sound like she was planning to leave. But so how in the midst of this horror does that happen? You know? Or is it that this is the this is how the poison is turned to a blessing or something, that because there's such suffering there, people are solidarity, do come together, do help one another. I don't know. I don't really have an explanation, but I do know from my experience, and both in all of these years of practice and doing sessions and living in community and working with all of you, that this is really a peacemaking practice that we have. And it's a challenge. It's been a challenging weekend for me. Saturday, I wasn't thinking about it so much. I was more focused on our sitting together and being together, and opening our homes to each other and sharing food. And, but since then, it's really been a koans once again, this whole story. And holding the suffering, because I know if I had a friend in Gaza, I would hear the same story as my friend in Tel Aviv. I'm sure those people are terrified that they're going to be completely, their homes will be destroyed. They've probably already lost family members, as have the Israelis on both sides. You know, it's the same thing. And it's important to recognize that Hamas is not the Palestinian people, and the Israeli government is not the Israeli people. But if we stay with our limited views of things, then we get confused. And when we start arguing about who's right and who's wrong, and it's not about right and wrong, actually. It's really about what we share. And not seeing that. And I told my friend Sabine that when I was in Jerusalem and I went on a tour, a guy gave us a tour around the city, old city, and then took us outside the walls to the Mount of Olives. And he told us the story of how Jesus on his last night looked down over the city and saw the just the teeming, all of the delusions of our human condition manifest there, and wept and said, poor Jerusalem, poor Jerusalem. And it's still the same thing, although I didn't say to Sabine, poor Jerusalem, I said, poor humans, poor us. You know? When we don't see, when we act from a deluded place instead of an enlightened place. So I would like to open it up for all of you, because I'm sure you all have feelings and thoughts and have struggled with this as well, I'm sure. Or questions or whatever you'd like to say.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you, Amy, for talking about this. I just came hot from the news when to get to this session, and I was worried that it wouldn't be a topic, and I didn't know if I could just go into some other place of reflection, because it's just, I lived in the area. I was in a Palestinian refugee camp when I was 13 years old, and it's probably their grandchildren are there now. And I went back in 2015 with a group of, well, I don't know if the group was oriented that way. It was actually, it's a private company, but the man who ran the company was in touch with only projects between that were being led by Palestinians with Jewish Israelis. We cried for 5 days. Everything we saw was, I don't think they were legally actually allowed to do it. We went to a farm with a Palestinian, run by a, not a kibbutz, a farm, run by a Palestinian and an Israel, a Jewish Israeli. As a matter of fact, he was American, I think, the guy. And they had every reason in the world not to connect. And they were hot on this project of doing this together and being allowing other people to work the soil together, as coming from different parts of the society. It's discouraged to be, especially, I mean, it's not discouraged. I think it's illegal. We're also in, the first day we went to a school. This guy is so brilliant. I saw him again. I'm not going to remember his name. It's Ellie something, but I don't remember his last name. It was a school because they weren't just Palestinians, but all kinds of different foreigners who were not Israeli and who were not Jewish can't go to the same school system. So his school was just sort of all the rejects, and they didn't have any papers. And this guy had found a way to get documentation for his students. He entered them in junior sporting events in different countries so that they would have to get a passport to go to them. And everybody was prepped to the brim to be super athletes so that they could go and compete in other countries. And then he would plead with the government to get these people passports. So there were all these little semi-illegal plans and projects to be able to bring people together, because it's discouraged. It's apartheid. What I saw in 2015 is apartheid. There were two highways. There was an upper highway and a lower highway, because they were afraid of having Palestinians on the road that would shoot them down, I guess. I don't know. The other thing I noticed, I listened to Meet the Press yesterday. And I think it was coming up in the French news I was listening to, is the what you were saying, that Hamas is not representative of Palestinians on the whole. And the Israeli government is not representative of Israelis on the whole, who probably at this point, most of them, just want to have peace. I mean, it's a beautiful part of the world, and there are walls everywhere, and there are restrictions everywhere. So even in American news, what's her name, the new woman on Meet the Press, made it clear that this was not representative of Palestinians. Because it's so easy for that to become, I'm sure that the French right wing is going to go crazy with this stuff. It's so easy to say, we'll see the Arabs, but that, you know, most Palestinians will just want to raise their family. As the Dalai Lama says, most people just want to be happy and do their job and raise their family. So thank you very much for making this our subject.
Yeah, hi everyone. Yeah, as I was coming back from the countryside earlier on today, I was listening to the news, and as if somehow I had hoped that something had changed from one news broadcast to the next. And then I realized I could see the danger of being in this type of events, to just keep listening to the news and watching TV and thinking, yeah, what's the right amount? What's the right amount of listening and watching all that, and what can be done? I sent a message this morning to my cousin who lives in Tel Aviv, and she was in Greece, but she said, now I'm going back on Wednesday to war zone. So one of the tiny thing I thought I could do is just to say, well, we can let's speak if you want. Yeah. So we'll speak next Saturday, when she will be back in her war zone. Yeah, and this morning on the French radio, there was Delphine Horviller, who is a rabbi. She was pointing out to the fact that it seemed that there was some moral it's like anything goes. It felt like she was pointing out to the fact that anything goes morally, from the moral point of view. It's like you could just kidnap civilians, you could just bomb civilians. It just seems that just anything goes. And it's very frightening too, when all moral compass is just gone.
Yes, and that's an interesting point about the moral compass, which when we are not aware of our nature, as we know with the precepts, that there are different ways of looking at the precepts. There's one that is circumstantial because we don't want to do harm. And because we see the oneness. But if we don't see the oneness, then we really, or if we don't see the relative, if we don't make a distinction between, soldiers and civilians, then there's a problem. Or if we only focus on the differences between Israelis and Palestinians, we don't see the oneness, then we're in trouble too. And when those things are ignored, then yes, the moral compass goes haywire, as we say in English, goes all over the place. Then there are no limits. Yeah. You become lost.
And one thing that I keep going back to when I hear these horrible stories from here, but also other stories, is like, this is what happens when people feel they're not seen, they're not heard. And after a while, it just doesn't work in any situation, just anywhere. And I think we can all relate to that. When we're not heard, it makes us very unhappy. When we feel we're not seen and heard and loved and appreciated.
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. I was really struck. I just heard the news on Saturday, like late after we had our day of practice. And I was very struck by the fact that happened on that day. I had mentioned on Saturday that it was this day in the Jewish, like in the traditional Jewish calendar. Basically, it's a day of gathering. This day, assembly or coming together. So I was really struck by then watching the news later that day. Once again, I've been very sensitive to the fact that how so many times because in this practice we talk a lot about, and we hear talking a lot about this idea of the self and the image of the self and this notion of identity. And I've been very struck by the fact how so many times it seems this the way of having a sense of self, or like self, like in the larger sense of belonging to a group. How so many times it happens through a feeling of separation, as we say, the opposition, basically. That's what catches my attention. I know who I am if I am opposed to, because I am opposed to that person or that group of people, and that helps me to know better, apparently, who I am. So it's like in opposition with, and even without, doesn't have to be anything as extreme or as violent as a war. A few days ago, there was this on October 5. Actually, we have a holiday in Portugal, so some politicians spoke on that day. And so, as probably most of you will know, we have this date that we celebrate. It's very important in Portugal, which is April 25, which was a revolution that ended like a fascist, a dictatorship regime for almost that went on for almost 50 years. And then there is this other date, which is like not very relevant, which actually it's also 25, but it's not 1974, it's 1975, and it's November, not April, but November. And so this politician, he spoke on October 5, and he was, something about beginning to celebrate this November 25, because in some way November 25 is seen as, so the revolution was kind of going off tracks towards a more left communist thing, and so to November 25 is like putting it back on a more democratic, balanced path. But when I heard him, the first thing that came to my mind was, oh yeah, great. Just one more thing to divide people, to put people even more against, like making two sides. So now there will be people who will We'll absolutely celebrate April 25, and then there is all this group of people, more, maybe more a bit right wing, not extreme, but that will, okay, so now they will start celebrating this other thing. And I really, yeah, that's like, yeah, great. That's exactly what we need right now. More division, more opposition. Yeah, so many times it seems to come down to this, like you only know who you are in opposition regarding something else. It's yeah, it's thank you.
Yes, well, because that is the nature of things, that if there is, we don't see any light if there is not darkness. We need that contrast. And the same thing, we don't see darkness if there is no light. So it's absolutely that. It's our identities and the way that we recognize differences is in contrast.
But then we see many times we only see, we see only that.
Exactly. We don't see oneness here. Because yes, like as with darkness and light, or as I say, the beach and the ocean, where does one begin and the other end? It's all one, actually.
The sad thing about this recent conflict is, as we speak, that it seems to be on a trajectory to escalate, and it's frightening to think that maybe it's not over this hostilities, but I hope it's just my fear, and I'm wrong, but I can easily imagine very violent response on the part of Israeli Defense Force, and then the rage among Arabs who will join the insurgency even more. And we are sitting here in a relatively peaceful part of the world, and basically are helpless. We just don't know what to do. And on my part, I'm at our neighbors in Ukraine, there is a war going on for quite some time already. And I actually I live in a block of apartments, and the apartment next to mine seemed to be empty, and now it lives there lives a young man. He could be from Ukraine, a nice man in his 20s, and so many refugees here. And what I can see is it's only so much we can take. That after now, of course, there is a anxiety that it may it may go farther, also helplessness. There is a little bit different conflict over there than in Israel. Now it's more, seems to be more spontaneous, not the state actors like in between Russia and Ukraine, but the helplessness is the same. And also we can take only so much of this as human beings. And what I can see is that people simply cannot take it anymore, that it's already like filled to the brim, that there are, you know, elections in this country now, and of course it's less important now, but just to escape, that people try to think about different things. And honestly, who can blame those of us who can't take it anymore, you know, be it Ukraine, be it Israel, and be it, you know, other things. And it's anyway, it's good to be with you and share this helplessness together, and appreciate the time that we still have relatively peaceful, that we can be like this, and don't want to take too much time, but I'm happy to see all of you after this summer break, and I'm very feel privileged to be able to join you every now and then. Thank you for your attention.
Hello, everyone. I actually learned about it late on Sunday morning. I had, after the retreat, the day of practice, I was busy until late at night and in the morning. And it's my mother who told me. I was with her, and she was very upset. Being a Jew, I don't know if that probably does make a difference. And I just realized how difficult, when talking to her, to have a speech of just compassion for all those suffering, be it the Israelis or the Arabs. And it's hard to hold that in a way, and that love for everyone. when people are hurt or sat or yeah, or targeted or whatever. So not easy. And then and at the and as some of you said, it's the of course it's not Hamas is not the Palestinians or and the government is not the Jews, the people. And some people are saying this is because of our government that we are in this situation. And Hamas is also held in by Iran, who want to annihilate Israel. It's so complicated. It's just such a mess. Such a mess. And it's just, how do you get out of such a mess? How do you make people sit on a cushion and just see that it's not about, you know, I mean, it's not about that. it's I mean, then you can go on to everything, you know, our planet and Ukraine and everything that's happening everywhere. It's always the same story. It just gets worse and worse and uglier and uglier, and it's hard to keep faith in the middle of all that. So yeah, that's it. Thank you, because it's not an easy topic to bring on the table. It's so conflicting. So dividing, it's hard.
Well, that is exactly why it's not hard to bring it onto the table, because of that. It's so clear how, and we can so recognize as we're all expressing, you know, the hopelessness, the impossibility of it, we feel just defeated. What can we possibly do? And we all share that, and it really is just such an obvious topic for us, because it is just another example, perfect manifestation of the root of all of our problems, not seeing the oneness, not awakening to the oneness of life, the wholeness of life. And we can't make anyone sit on a cushion, and we don't need to. We do our work among ourselves here, and then that has an effect on what happens then in with our families. Or Joe says, you know, he talks to his cousin, or I talk to my friend, or we look at people differently then, experience them differently. When we can acknowledge this, we can see the horror of it, what arises when we focus only on the differences, and the harm that is inflicted by that. It helps us to see it so clearly, a case like this. This is not a justification for the deep pain and suffering and harm. That's not a justification for it. But it is an occasion for us to, that's why I brought it up. It's because it's such an obvious occasion for us to look at this and look at our practice and look at how this plays out in our lives. And of course, none of us will solve this Israeli-Palestinian conflict. None of us will. But we can put our minds to rest and awaken to the wholeness of life, the oneness of life, which then makes a big difference. It changes everything.
It changes our individual experience.
Right. And when your individual experience changes, then how you interact with the world and your actions in the world change. And then that will have an effect. So let's just take the Israeli conflict. If we had not come to this point where, you know, Palestinians are living in pretty much an apartheid state and living in ghettos and don't have enough water and don't have work and there's walls separating and everything. If those conditions weren't happening, then there would not be this conflict. At the same time, if the Israelis did not feel threatened and had not been attacked 50 years ago on that very day, and had their very existence threatened once again, then we would not be in this situation. So you can always look to, okay, well, what is the root? Where every action has a consequence. Karmic, that's what karma is. And, you know, the famous one about the butterfly flapping its wings on one side of the world has an effect on something happening on the other side of the world. It does. We may not see it, but it does. It changes how we experience, and then that changes how we act. And that makes a difference. We can see it in our families and our workplaces and walking down the street or riding on the bus or buying bread. First, we have to really see ourselves. And when we really see ourselves, then we can really see the other. And like Joa said, it's about being seen and recognized. First, we have to recognize ourselves, though. That's what our practice is about. So I think we're about out of time. Thank you for engaging with this topic. Whether you said anything or not, I'm sure it's an issue for you as well. Appreciate your lives and appreciate this moment and one another, families. And be well. Thank you.